Well, damned if you haven't found the worst zombie takeout in the whole goddamn city.
Hello, and welcome to episode 482 of Zombie Takeout, the B-movie and cult movie show. I'm John.
Hello, I'm Scotto.
And before we get to this week's movie, quick news story, just a headline. This is from The Hollywood Reporter. Joker 2, Lady Gaga in early talks to join Joaquin Phoenix, Todd Phillips in musical sequel.
You know, I've not seen the first Joker.
I have no interest in the first Joker.
But I have a strong interest in this.
Same. I desperately want to see this. I have no desire to see... I can't say definitely because I haven't seen the first Joker, but it just seems like incel propaganda.
You know, it makes me just want to watch The King of Comedy. I haven't seen that movie in years, and I don't see where it's streaming or anything.
It was a mix of King of Comedy and another Scorsese movie.
Like, they were totally doing like this, I don't know.
And it just seems so incel. But... if they're doing a musical, I've seen some speculation that it's going to be just like one dream sequence, but I hope it's like the entire movie.
No, they need to get the South Park guys in on this. Let's be honest.
I hope they've just completely lost their mind and then the whole movie thing, completely parodying the whole thing. Anyway, finally on to this week's movie from 2000, The Watcher, concluding our Keanu Reeves trilogy in style. Well, in Zombie Takeout style. And that brings us to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by Screenwriting. There's only so much an actor can do.
And also brought to you by Movies Filmed Where You Live. No, that's nowhere near there. What are they talking about?
It's a good thing one of us lives in a major city, because once in a while a movie pops up that's set there, and it's a lot of fun.
Someday somebody will film something out there, don't worry.
I don't even want to think about that.
It'll be about a body being buried or something.
And I think it was Amityville that was filmed in Tom's River.
What's that? I think you're right. I think Amityville Horror was Tom's River.
I grew up like 20 minutes from the house.
You got all the Kevin Smith movies, of course.
Well, they're a little further north, but...
they did Brick.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
The Ocean Ice Palace.
Yeah.
They had some fantastic, really good-looking extras in the Ocean Ice Palace scene, I tell you.
Hmm. Anyway.
Anyway. It's my turn. So we have a FBI agent in his shrink's office telling him about the one that got away that just burnt him out, and he just got too old for that shit. And we find out later that he moved from his place in LA to come out to Chicago, and you know, just, you can't even say to start a new life, it's just to wallow. He comes home from his job, he doesn't even take his jacket off, he just kind of sits on a couch and just kind of stares off. It's pretty weird stuff.
He's on a ridiculous amount of medication.
Right. I've never heard of somebody having to inject for migraines.
No. Not into their stomach especially.
I mean, I have relatives that have had migraines their whole lives, and I've never, ever heard of somebody having to inject for it.
I know people who would be very happy if they could just shoot themselves up with something to cure their migraines.
Yeah. So, there's that, and we find out that the killer that he has ran from, or not ran from, really, he just gave up on, decided to follow him out to Chicago. Mm. There's something going on, isn't there? So he...
Fortunately, it wasn't the thing I thought that was going to go on. I will get to that in a minute.
His MO is that he meticulously stalks his victims. At least he did up until maybe the second victim in this movie. And then just start coming really quickly.
He gets sloppy.
He stalks them and makes detailed notes about what they are doing, and then he can easily just, you know, wait for them to come to him, or, you know, in their own place, and they won't even know he's there until it's too late. And so he's, of course, taunting our hero, the FBI agent, who's still off until just when he thinks he's out, he gets pulled back in. And he's back on the case. He's calling the shots all of a sudden, not just a consultant.
Yeah,
he's leading the investigation.
Even though he, as far as I know, quit and was an absolute mess. He's now completely pulled together.
And he kind of, the local law enforcement doesn't get locked out like they normally would. He gets, he pretty much gets enlisted and works as his partner. And
this movie is gloriously illogical.
Right. Yes. It's like, wait, what? Just, you know, wait till you hear what they did with the space-time continuum here in Chicago. But so they, of course, the victims start getting personal, and they start coming faster and getting killed, just, you know, short of, you know, finding who he is. One of them almost had him. They have this epic Blues Brothers style chase scene in Lower Wacker Drive, just like the Blues Brothers did. And it involves as many car, you know, cop cars crashing and being lit on fire, which, I mean, I guess that's a twist the Blues Brothers almost had with Carrie Fisher, the flamethrower. Finally, the killer stalks the shrink that we see him at the beginning, and he does take her hostage, but he gets the audio tapes that the shrink thankfully leaves unlocked. He just listens to a few things about himself in the sessions, and then the jig is up, and they have the final confrontation scene, and hilarity ensues.
And after the jazzy yet tense opening music, which I enjoyed, it was kind of like this jazzy thing with this really nice percussion, but then these like really twisted sounds over top of it.
they loved their sound effects in this movie. Yes.
One of my favorite things in the movie, Keanu dancing in slow motion to Rob Zombie songs.
I think so. I saw somewhere that they were trying to do like a nod to The Matrix.
It was just hilariously awkward. And
yeah.
And I really like Keanu as a serial killer.
Huh. I you know what? I'm ambivalent about Keanu as a serial killer because I don't feel like they really gave him much to do as a serial killer.
Should we get to the trivia?
Sure.
Reeves has stated that he was not interested in the script, but was forced into doing the film when a friend forged his signature on the contract. He performed the role rather than get involved in a lengthy legal battle. Reeves reached an agreement with the distributor, Universal Pictures, in which he would not disclose what had happened until 12 months after the film's U.S. release. In return, Universal agreed to downplay Reeves' involvement in marketing, and Universal asked the film's producers to enhance Reeves' profit participation, leading to an additional $2 million for him. He was unhappy with the fact that his role, which was originally written as little more than a cameo, turned into a lead while he was still being paid scale in contrast to the other leads. I don't buy much of that, frankly.
I don't either. The director of this is a friend of his.
I think he took a paycheck role and later decided this wasn't such a good idea and tried to do, like, nope the fuck out of it.
I think he thought he was helping his friend out and was going to put in a few, you know, scenes in the movie. And then I think he walked in and found, like, wait a minute, I'm what now?
Right. That makes more sense, yeah.
And I also heard that he claimed it was his agent that forged the signature. But that, of course, is provable. And, I mean, wouldn't he just sue his agent for doing that?
Well, that's the thing. That's a big part of why I don't buy the story. Because
Right.
if someone forges your signature on a contract, you're gonna fucking sue.
Right.
I don't care. You're gonna fucking sue. Especially when you have Keanu in 2000 money.
I think he saw the final product and said, you don't understand, they kidnapped me and held me hostage at gunpoint and made me film this.
But there's sort of a lack of emotion that he brings to all of his roles
Yes.
that I think works really well for a killer.
It could. It could. I feel like, I don't know. I think maybe if the roles were reversed, this would have been better.
Spader as the killer would have been glorious as well.
Yeah. It was kind of refreshing at first to see him as the good guy, but then it was kind of like, ah, Nissim is the bad guy.
I'm just happy to see Spader in anything. I love
That's
his work.
true. It felt like he was a little too old or just, I don't know. It didn't seem like he fit this role.
He was about 40. He was actually
Yeah.
40 when it was released. Looks
Yeah.
younger. Something happened in that 20 years where he suddenly age suddenly caught up with him. Because at 40, he looked damn young.
Well, it's the Obi-Wan Kenobi thing.
But at 12 minutes, I have the note: if Spader hooks up with his therapist, I'm flipping a table. Fortunately, they didn't go there.
They came goddamn close, though. They.
I don't think my therapist would randomly visit me in the hospital unless I really.
Exactly.
Really, like, intensely asked her to.
Right. There's.
And she said that's the only way you were gonna, she was gonna see him. Phones were a thing in 2000.
Yeah, that scene was just really cringy.
But on to a previous cringy scene.
Yes,
He's
there's a
walking
lot
home.
of cringe in this.
Spader's character's walking home, in Chicago. And he sees this crime scene where, a murderer just happened. He just barges onto the crime scene, past a bunch of uniforms, no badge showing. Nobody says a word to him until this detective with an interesting accent who basically becomes his
Right.
partner.
And there are a lot of weird accents here in Illinois, but I don't know, he sounded very Texan.
And later in the movie, that same detective, Spader calls after he gets a photo of the next victim. Keanu's still sending this former investigator the pictures, but he calls him as this detective who was previously investigating a murder is chasing down a carjacker. I feel like that's something the uniforms would take care of. You don't really need a detective to chase down a carjacker.
True. It was a fun scene, though.
Oh, yeah.
And there were very few fun scenes in this movie. I mean, Keanu dancing and then just the casual, almost Monty Python, boring life of a charter accountant, thing where he's just like, oh no, it's fine.
Spader's like,
Because he
did I
has to
catch you at a
be.
bad time? He's
I
hearing the
can call
chase in
you
the background.
back.
And he's like, no, it's fine, I can talk. The camera store scene was also ridiculous.
Yes.
He just he walks into a camera store, he's picking out his next victim. This is Keanu. He just picks up a camera and a roll of film, opens the roll of film. Again, this is 2000, and says he's going to test it and then have them develop it there, even though he hasn't paid for any of it.
Right.
And the girl behind the counter is like, that's cool. Don't feel like they really established enough about Spader's character in the
No,
beginning.
they did not. There's very little about any of these characters that are established, really. Like, and the worst treatment, of course, are all the female characters
Oh,
in
of course.
this, who are just pretty much, they're all headstones, Every one of them had the
Except for the
same
therapist.
value as that headstone, where they were just used as pieces for this proxy, affair slash war that the two of them were going through.
The only one who survived was a therapist, and she was a plot device.
Yeah. Well, right. Yeah, she could, and gets herself caught, you know. The whole damsel in distress tied to the chair thing, which,
Played by Marissa Tomei, who is
yeah.
better than this.
Yeah.
Like Spader, and I will say better, even Keanu. I will say, though, that this trilogy has given me an appreciation for Keanu's acting style.
I'm still on the fence.
I'm no longer gonna bag on his acting. I'm no longer gonna say he can't act. He's a personality actor. He brings the same thing to every role, like Nicholson, I mentioned, Sam Jackson, Michael Cena. There's a lot of people. Senna, like I think the Arrested Development guy. There's Jason Bateman, also from Arrested Development,
Oh,
also
yeah.
the same guy in every role. He's that type of actor. It's just a matter of whether or not you like that thing and whether or not it fits the movie.
You know,
I
it's
don't ever.
funny. Bateman as a kid started out as a assholes.
Yeah. And I mean, as an adult, he's not that different. As in the roles he plays, I don't know Bateman at all.
Now he's like the nicer guy, you
Well,
know?
kinda. It just comes down to whether or not you like what they bring to the role and whether or not they're well cast. I don't ever want to think of anyone else playing Ted Theodore Logan.
That's true.
You know, he was, whether, we disagreed on Scanner Darkly, but he was great in the role. He fit the role perfectly.
They were all muted. This movie would have done good with the rotoscope treatment, I think, actually. This movie needed a gimmick.
I liked that, when they get the photo of the girl from the camera store, because she's the, next victim, he basically asks for a zoom and enhance.
And nobody else thinks of this.
You can't actually zoom and enhance. It's not a thing. There is a finite number of pixels. Or, in a real life photograph, I don't know what the word is, but you can only zoom in so far before it distorts.
True. What's interesting is they're in the Thompson Center, which is that it just this gaudy ass red, white, and blue building in downtown Chicago, and there's really no mistaking it, you know? Like it's why I could say that with like
100%
10
certainty.
seconds, you know, that it was the Thompson Center, because you saw all the red columns and stuff. They use this building, it's the climax in the movie Running Scared. So like they have this shootout with Jimmy Smits, like, and it takes like half an hour and they're just blasting things in this atrium.
One of those places where if you've been there once, you'll remember it forever.
Well, right. And so you'd obviously see some red in the reflection, you know, because everything in there is red. It's really weird. And I've been there 100 times because there's like a really big train station beneath it, which is where she was probably heading to go home.
I'm glad they head faked, her being on the phone with her mother when Spader was gonna call, because
Yeah.
they kind of made you think like she was gonna be stuck on the phone when the call came in. No, but there really wasn't much suspense, because if you watched the trailer, you knew he was gonna go after the therapist in the end.
Well, yeah,
And
you
I
could
think
see
even
that
if you
coming from
didn't
a
see
mile
the
away.
trailer, that was gonna be obvious. That was pretty obvious.
I kept thinking there was going to be a head fake for this and calling for this, and instead it was just, no, it's just everything is as it seems, it appears to be.
So I said I'd be surprised if they kill if they manage to save the camera store girl.
Well, right. And
Same thing with the homeless girl.
Oh, that's right. They didn't save her, did they? They went upstairs and she was downstairs. And they don't even like look at the body there or like even give a second of like, oh, you know, we didn't get her kind of thing. It was just, oh, her use in this story is done. And we're moving on.
I like the scene when he kind of cased the therapist's office. That was smooth. Like, took
Well,
the elevator up with Spader.
right. How does Spader not recognize him, though? Come on.
If he always got away, he probably didn't get a good look at his face.
But they were there in like the fires together in LA. I mean, there's no way he doesn't see him and know who he is.
And he spent enough time on the phone with him. If he knows his voice, they did. So, say he did say something in the elevator, so that should have maybe tipped it off.
Right.
It is once again a deeply stupid movie.
Like, it would have been one thing if, you know, he stalked Spader and treated Spader as his victim and you know, took all the details of his movements and knew everything about him. And that's how he did it. But the whole, like, going with him and going, oh, so that's what he's doing. He's going to his therapist kind of thing. Win the elevator with him.
Yeah.
I don't think that was kind of ridiculous.
You know, yeah, it was ridiculous, but I thought it was kind of, you know, fun. I also didn't know Seattle's Best Coffee was actually a thing. I Googled it, and
yes. It's
an actual company.
Yes, it is an off-brand Starbucks.
But when he has his introductory session with the therapist, Keanu, this is, he has this really annoying look to camera, which was like almost like an evil, a visual evil laugh.
Right.
Also didn't appreciate the don't speak sound alike when the homeless girl clocked him with the boombox.
Jesus Christ, I can't believe they would do that.
Like, I've never been a No Doubt fan, but they should have sued.
You know, yeah, right. And I mean, I'm not even a fan, and I just think that was atrocious. That could be one of the biggest atrocities this movie committed. And that's after saying what they did to all those female characters.
Mm-hmm. I thought the rooftop chase scene was refreshingly, like, ungainly. Like they weren't athletic at all.
Right.
I enjoyed that. The gasoline scene, you know, he runs over these gas pumps and it's like raining gas, and he lights the hood of, this is Keanu, right, lights the hood of his car with a Zippo. Only gas vapor is flammable. I know people who've worked in gas stations. You can put a cigarette out in a bucket of gas just fine. So
it's not lighter fluid?
No. So doing that would not light the hood of the car on fire. It would create basically a mushroom cloud from all the vapor.
I have my notes. Try to be inconspicuous, like not ride around the city with your hood on fire.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's also the, like, pointing a big neon sign at himself.
I appreciated the gas for less sign. That's a super Chicago, old school Chicago thing that no longer exists.
I think maybe Spader should have told the cops that he was going to the cemetery after he received the photo that was a previous victim.
Well, there's a lot that the whole movie is just like, what the fuck is Spader thinking?
Yeah.
You know, like, he knows he's being stalked, so he doesn't have a detail following him.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if you know he's being stalked, you just have somebody detailing him,
right,
and they catch him while he's being stalked. It's really that easy.
Yeah. I liked the line, "Want a beer? It'll make you feel better." Apparently Keanu really is Canadian.
The whole, you know, they're in the restaurant and then he finally says, "I wonder if he's watching us." It's like, yeah, you idiot. You know, he told you what he was doing. Yeah. And your action is to go and try to chase him down on foot while he's in a car yourself? Now, he got stuck in Chicago traffic, mm-hmm, but, you know, that, yeah, you know, isn't a surprise.
And the phone trick when he's in the car with Keanu just seemed a bit cheesy to actually work.
Like, Keanu wouldn't have heard the other guy going, "Hello, Campbell, yeah, what you doing? What's
right
going on?" He wouldn't hear his voice. Like, dude, you have your phone on.
And then Keanu pulls this thing of, like, how we need each other, Maria and Yang and all of this. The therapist, he's saying this to Spader as the therapist,
yeah,
is tied up, and he asks the therapist to verify him, and she basically says yes, when in reality, I don't think she would have actually said they need each other, just, or that they derive meaning from each other, just that maybe Spader is deriving the meaning in his life from his pursuit of this killer.
Like, I think you guys would be healthier apart, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
Just because you're in a relationship doesn't mean it's a good one. This, yeah, one seems pretty toxic to me.
Although I did like Spader's line about how you're my job. Like, you mean nothing to me.
Right.
You're my
Your
job.
paperwork. Honestly, why didn't Spader just shoot him in the balls in the cemetery?
I
Like, he didn't have to
mean,
kill him.
you
Just take the
80% of
gun,
mass.
shoot him in the balls. Okay, now take me to her. I didn't kill you.
Oh, in the cemetery,
Yes. Instead, he gives him his gun? Like, wait, what?
I mean,
Why?
I can't speak from experience in a couple of ways there, but I think that might make it difficult to walk. Yeah, handing them the gun was a little odd. The fire in the climax was very, very 90s.
Oh my God, that was some bad special effects. That was asylum level stuff.
That big fireball that looked like it was drawn on the screen.
Yes.
I did get a kick out of Keanu's death scene, though.
I was expecting something with, like, the helicopters to have strings on them or something at that point. I was like, what are we watching here?
And no sequels or remakes, thankfully.
No.
On a brains.
Well, I had there's some fun I had watching this was
Oh,
just
okay.
seeing the different parts of Chicago
Oh,
in this.
yes.
Of course, Ernie Hudson, who should have had more.
Always.
But the exterior of his office, that's where I work.
Oh, okay. Okay.
That's my office. Well, when I go to the office. And judging from the wood grain, I would say that is an interior. Even the interior was probably inside that building. I mean, they film Empire there, so it's not like, they haven't filmed stuff in there. And I seriously am suspicious that where the homeless girl was living and those giant stone columns, I think that's now the Groupon office that I used to work in.
Oh,
The
okay.
Montgomery Ward catalog building, which they were. It's kind of like in the intro of Good Times when you're going through that Cabrini Green thing, which is
Okay.
also no longer there. But that whole scene along the river, the chases and stuff, were. Like, that's my old office. That's my new office. I really think that interior, like, to see it in that abandoned state, but to see those giant ass concrete columns that I was always kind of like, ah, because it's a converted warehouse into an office, they just put cubicles around a lot of that shit. But it used to just be open plan with like conveyor belts and weird shit. There's also a lot of weird things they did with space. I think some of them were on purpose. Like they said they were up near Skokie at the end, and they're on Dearborn near Skokie. And Dearborn, of course, doesn't go anywhere near that. That's just a road downtown. But what's even weirder is they clearly pulled up to a building and giant letters on the building said 500 North Cermak. In stone on the building. Like, I mean, not just a little sign, it was like almost a billboard side sign of 500 North Cermak on the building. And so, I mean, I guess it was something where they didn't match the dialogue scenes with the action scenes,
Right.
maybe.
Well, and this happens a lot. I've heard New Yorkers complain about the same sort of thing in a lot of movies.
Something intentionally had to have been done there where maybe it was an inside joke where it was somebody's apartment near Skokie that they just wanted to put on the map.
I'm just thinking the screenwriter and director didn't know Chicago.
Which is really weird because, I mean, so many people do. The other thing was that there is a federal building here that's kind of famous, actually. It has this giant sculpture of like a metal origami crane in front of it.
Okay.
But they might not have had the rights to shoot there, which is probably why they had to use my office. They also probably wanted to get the corn cobs in somehow, which is across the street from my office.
I mean, they weren't necessarily going for like a real obvious Chicago thing because you never saw the bean.
The bean didn't exist then.
Oh, it didn't?
Nope.
Oh, shit. Didn't
The
realize.
Bean was built for Millennium Park, which I'm trying to remember what year that finally opened. It went years over. It was supposed to have opened in 2000. They filmed this in 99, which is like the first time we visited here too.
Okay.
And yeah, I think the Bean opened like 2 or 3 years later,
But there are
something
certain
like
other
that.
things, like there's the Bean, there's the L train, there's the
There's
river.
a lot of L train stuff,
You know,
and
that you saw a lot of that in like in Gotham Batman movies, which were trying to be Chicago. I don't know if they filmed there, but
a
you
lot of
know.
Batman, the ones with the Batman Begins, the first and the Dark Knight.
Yeah, the
Those
Batman.
are two Chicago Batman movies where we were standing in for Gotham City.
Right, yeah, they were filmed in Chicago. So you get a lot of very clear Chicago, notes.
And then the third one's like they just said, now Pittsburgh's gonna be Gotham
I
City. And it's like, wait,
try not to
what?
remember the third one. Anyway, now on to Brains.
On the brains, yeah.
Well, on its face, to me, it was a two, but I'm giving it a half a brain for Spader, half a brain for Keanu as a killer, and half a brain for Keanu awkwardly dancing in slow motion to Rob Zombie. So 3.5.
I probably would have given this a two, but the Chicago stuff kept me so entertained, I'm going 2.5.
All right. And what have you learned?
We learned that, it's true the flamboyant serial killer trope is overblown, but maybe a dull serial killer doesn't make for a good movie.
And I've learned that Keanu doesn't like Jersey. I kind of resented that joke.
They should have gotten Stephen Wright to play a serial killer. I guess they still could.
I mean, that would work for me. And that's it for The Watcher and our Keanu trilogy. Until next time, when we'll be reviewing the first six episodes of Cowboy Bebop on the TV show. Can't wait for this. I've tried to get you to watch this for quite a while. Until then, of course, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you
There
are.
you are.